Living History of Illinois in Chicago. The Village of Pinnock, a neighborhood of Chicago, Illinois. The little village of Pinnock, founded in 1881, was located at Diversey Street and Bellew, now St. Louis Avenue, Fulton and Crawford Avenues, now Pulaski Road. It was annexed by the city of Chicago in 1889. Homo Pinnock was the founder of the village of Pinnock and was the most prominent figure there in the early days of the area. Centered on Wrightwood Avenue, which was originally called Pinnock Boulevard, was planned to be a hefty industrial and residential district. Lots were laid out, subdivisions added, and business enterprises made their appearance. The original name of the Healy Metro Station was originally named after this now lost settlement. Thwarted by circumstances as well as the decline of Homo Pinnock's fortune, this district declined to the point of ruins. In the June 14, 1903 Chicago Sunday Tribune, wrote an article about the neighborhood. Article, A Deserted Village in Chicago. Standing like tombstones over a village that now exists only in name, there are within Chicago's borders a dozen or more picturesque ruins which represent all that is left of what once promised to be a great manufacturing center. And hanging about the crumbling bricks and rotting timber is an almost forgotten chapter in the city's history, a story of a boom that collapsed almost before it gained an impetus and left its promoter with little more than the valuable farmland to show for the money he had invested. How many Chicagoans, as they are whisked by the station of Pinnock on the St. Paul Railway, have viewed the great ruins and wondered what they meant? And how many, to this day, can tell? Few of the oldest residents of the neighborhood are able to explain, and then in the vaguest way. Why, there was a soap factory there once, a long, long time ago, one will say. No, it was a big warehouse, and it burned, another will impart. But in all the neighborhood, which in most part has been peopled since the big plant and the once substantial brick houses which are adjacent to it were given over to the elements, not one person could be found who could recall the spectacular operations of Homo Pinnock, who, in his dreams, saw on the prairie of the northwest side a manufacturing community that would cause the world to marvel. Willing to take chances. It was 22 years ago that Pinnock, the owner of a rich gold mine in Colorado, came to Chicago, intending to multiply his fortune and startle the financial world. He had the daring of a D'Artagnan, meaning, one who is exceptionally skilled in the use of sexual persuasion, and was willing to risk his all in a single throw. The mine was paying, how long it would continue to pay he did not know, but he planned to push his operations forward so rapidly that he would be prepared for any crash that might come. Out at Fulton and 40th Avenues, Pinnock found a stretch of level farmland that suited his needs. It was within easy access to the St. Paul Railway and could be bought for a song, for in those days Chicago did not extend to the far northwest. Pinnock secured options on several thousand acres of land, and almost before the farmers knew of his plans, carload after carload of bricks was being dumped beside that track where the little frame railway station of Pinnock now stands. Scores of workmen followed the building material, and a foundation 600 by 650 feet had been erected. "We'll have a car wheel factory there, the largest in the world," Pinnock announced, as he stood by and proudly watched the workmen peeling brick upon brick. The foundation was completed and then came a halt. Perhaps word came from the west which delayed operations, but that is for Pinnock himself to tell. But the interested farmers had not long to wait, for Pinnock again serenely confident that his city of dreams would be carried to a glorious completion, put a force of men at work building what he called the east wing of his plans. "The wheat will come in time, it's sure to come, it must come," he mused. When the east wing had been completed, Pinnock set about looking for a tenant, as for some reason or other his car wheel factory had not materialized. Capital was skeptical and hesitated in moving so far out, but Pinnock was no to be denied. beginning of the boom. Soon the Osgood Manufacturing Company, makers of refrigerators and certain articles of furniture, moved into the plant, and then came the first breath of the short-lived boom. The factory employed many hands, as many as 500, some authorities say, and these men had to be housed and fed. Small stores began to spring up around the neighborhood, and the real estate men made a rush to be first on the field. Like other booms, things were overdone. Brick houses that cost $3,000 were erected, and these to accommodate the men of modest wages who were working in the plant Pinnock had built. But all this time Pinnock would smile and say, "Better times are coming." And there was magic in his words. It so happened that Pinnock, whatever else he may have been, was no prophet. Better times did not come, either for Pinnock or those who had staked their fortunes with his. The plant, already large, was not increased to cover the big foundation, and one day all except the somber walls that are now standing, went up in smoke. Pinnock's dream was over, and the awakening had come. Then, according to men who were close to Pinnock in his venture, the mine out west became unproductive, and Pinnock's cup of despair was filled to overflowing. Just what caused the factory fire is not known, but if human hands set at the torch might just as well have been applied to the other buildings that has been erected in the boom town. With the factory gone, there was no reason for the existence of the village out on the prairie, and those who had cast their lots with Pinnock flocked back to town. Neglected houses tumble. Thus it came to pass that time in the elements, destroyers of the staunchest structures, laid hold of the buildings that the fire had spared. The brick houses began to crumble, and as Chicago began to spread toward Pinnock's abandoned village, the boys made pilgrimages to the ruins and aided in the destruction. First window panes and then window casings were broken from their fastenings, till soon the elements had the once proud houses at their mercy. With the expansion of Chicago, a few of the brick residences were rescued and patched up, and are now tenanted by families who can afford no better shelter, but many of the $3,000 structures have reached a stage of decay which makes them untenable to the most miserable squatter. Perhaps no resident of Chicago has a clearer recollection of Pinnock and his operations than J.F. Keeney, who held stock in Pinnock's mine and bought heavily of farmland in the vicinity of the Dream City. "It's so long ago that even I have to search my memory," he said in speaking of the village that has gone to ruin. Pinnock came to Chicago fresh from the West, where he had made money in mining, and conceived the idea of building the factory and town out there on the prairie. He was enthusiastic and secured options on farmlands on every side of his plant to be. "I had owned some stock in his mine, the Small Hopes, I think he called it, and had made money, so I followed him in his new venture, putting some money into the factory and also buying farmland in the vicinity of the factory. As I remember it, the first trouble came when something went wrong with the mine. It filled with water or something of the sort, and Pinnock was without the means to carry his operations to completion. He was resourceful, though, and it is hard to say what he might have succeeded in doing had it not been for the fire. As for myself, I held on to the land I had bought and several years after disposed of most of it at a good profit." The history of the village of Pinnock is easily told, don't you think?